everybody is a little happier. We don't have to worry about all that gnarly weather, although there's a little bit kind of on the horizon. That's all right, though. We'll make it through the weekend. Welcome to the show, everybody. So much to get to. I'm baffled because I've just been thinking about the hockey playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs and what transpired this last week. We'll get to all that. Oh, man, it was just like, it's like March Madness changed its name to April and decided to play hockey for a little while.
Hockey, baseball, basketball, everything.
It's nuts, man. It's nuts out there. Talking about local sports, they're talking about PAC baseball. They had a nice series win last weekend, beat New Mexico 2-1 on the road. Dropped the first game 6-4, but then came back and won 3-0 and 14-8 in the third game. So a solid outing there. Got better throughout the series. That's what you want to see, especially in conference play. And then they beat San Francisco in a midweek clash. Another game on the road. Big 8-1 win for Nevada there. Good road wins piled up. Those three road wins in a row over the last week or so. And that's going to put some confidence in you, especially when you're going up against a rival like UNLV.
Man, last night's game was amazing. It was one of the best games I think I've ever witnessed in terms of hitting, in terms of, you know, field play. Whatever it is. I mean, Shrum had two home runs, two-run home runs.
I mean, there's I feel like there's a little underrated power throughout the Nevada lineup. Like, there's power, but I think as a whole, that lineup is a little underrated.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I believe the score was 16-6 by the time they were done, right?
16-8. But you know, Nevada doubled UNLV's score basically through that game, and 13 of those 16 runs came in the fourth, fifth, and sixth innings. Those middle innings, Nevada just took over and really sank their teeth into the Rebels there. Game two tonight. It's in a couple hours. 5:40 is when pregame begins on our sister station, 94.1 FM, and then first pitch scheduled for right around 6 o'clock. Of course, John Ramey will be on the call for that one. And PAC softball also having a good week. They unfortunately lost the series against Fresno State 2-1 last weekend on the road. Lost 2-10 and then 0-6 in the first two games, but came back and won 5-1 in the third game. And they did win their first of three games against Colorado yesterday, 4-3, with game two today and game three tomorrow. And then a nice midweek game against Cal out of the Pac-12 coming in on Tuesday. But great stuff going on from the Pac on both diamonds. Looking good. Another team that is on the diamond and have put some good games together here recently are the Aces. They were struggling a little bit in that home series against El Paso. Unfortunately, dropped the first three games here, and then, of course, the fourth and final game being suspended due to that travel curfew. First time that's ever happened.
Really?
To a game that I've been board
op. Oh, that you've been a board op.
Yeah, that I've been a board op for. I've never had a game get suspended. And the funny thing is, it got suspended after the 10th inning. So literally, when El Paso comes back in here in July to play that second home series, they'll make up the game then. They could literally just play one more inning and then have the game be over.
Right, because the way the rule works is when there's a cutoff time, so say the cutoff time is 4 o'clock, but you start an inning in
at 4:15 that day, believe it or not.
Then you have to go through that half inning or complete the inning. It's basically up to the managers to go together and be like, all right, you know what? We're going to call it out here. We'll finish it in a couple months, whether it be a half inning or one inning or whatever it is, to finish off that game.
Yeah. Like you said, no new inning can start after that curfew time.
So if they were already in the 10th inning at 3:59 and 4 o'clock came, they have to finish that half inning.
Correct. So they completed 10 innings. Nobody won. The Aces had a chance to win. Yasmani Tomas was on third with one out. And the Aces had a pop-up that went just barely onto the grass in the infield. It was caught for the second out. And then as you're listening to it, Ryan Radke got a little caught off guard because he thought Tomas was just bluffing and maybe he took a couple hard steps to the plate just to kind of get everybody thinking. No, he just took off. So Yasmani broke for the plate on what was basically a glorified infield fly. And yeah, I mean, he got thrown out. Of course he's going to get thrown out. I mean, not to disrespect any of the El Paso players, I probably could have thrown him out from on the edge of the infield.
All you'd have to do is just kind of lob it underhand. Yeah. It's going to make it.
So that's unfortunate. They had a chance to win. They didn't get that chance. But they could still technically win that game when El Paso does come back here to Reno. But the Aces bounced back very nicely against Albuquerque on the road, winning two of those three games, flexing some muscle in that first game. A 10-1 victory, I believe, in the first and fourth innings, putting 5 runs on the board in both of those innings. So a great bounce back game after kind of struggling against El Paso at home, having that game suspended, to go on the road and really just kind of put a team in their place in that first game, which is always great when you can take game one on the road in any series. And then they won the first half of the doubleheader yesterday 6-3 before dropping the final game 2-4. Always tough when you have those doubleheaders in the same day, because I'm assuming they played shorter innings. They only played 7-inning games. But even with that, let's say you play obviously 9 innings in a regulation game, that's still 14 innings in one day. So that's going to take its toll on you. But Reno will be starting a 4-game series with El Paso on the road, and that starts today. And that will be their final home series before coming back, or final road series before coming back home and playing Fresno, which is how they started the year, playing 5 games in Fresno. So we'll see.
As long as the Aces can keep it going at the rate that they're at now. I was a little bit worried earlier on in April, the first couple of games. That first series really scared me, and even Ryan kind of was like, you know, you can't dig yourself in a hole, but you can definitely get it started in April.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as we keep that mentality of going, I know we had one game that was bad. We gave up. We had like an 8 run lead, and we gave it up, and we lost. So you can't do that. It was our relief pitching was not pleasant that day.
Yeah, bullpen struggled in that home series against El Paso.
Yeah, I think we had like a position player come in at one point.
Yeah,
and he pitched more strikes than any of the other pitchers did. But he did good. It was one of those where it's like, oh well, you know, he's doing pitches and everyone's laughing and having a good time. So at least it wasn't like they were mad about it or anything. Everyone was still having fun, at least.
That's true. You know who's having a lot of fun right now are the 1868 FC, who are nearly 2 months into their season and have only lost one game thus far. They continued that point scoring earlier this week, or actually a week from yesterday, or from tomorrow, I should say. Tomorrow is Saturday, so a week from tomorrow. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I try to be so smooth.
I don't know
this.
Where you're going with this.
Well, they beat the Colorado Switchbacks FC for the first time in franchise history.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and they did that last Saturday. So a week ago tomorrow. Not a week from, a week ago tomorrow. We worked through that. I'm proud of us all. but after dealing with some pretty tough weather, I mean, obviously anybody who plays in Reno is going to be used to tough weather, but I think they had something like a 2-hour weather delay and then, you know, had to play pretty much through snow, I think, for at least the first half. But they did end up getting the 2-0 victory. Seth Kasipul scored in the 64th minute, and Brian Brown scored in the 90th minute plus 3. Reno currently 7th in the Western Conference, but it's a very tight race right now in that conference to start the year. And some more news came out on the 1868 FC earlier this week. They hired a new general manager, which was Mr. Doug Raftery. I got the chance to sit down with him earlier this week, and I asked him what he thought about being GM, how did he get started doing that, and what he hopes to learn.
Learned a lot from the last general manager, Andy Smith, who was with the club for the first 2 years, and really had focused on the business development side, working with the local business leaders and enhancing, you know, what they do in the community in terms of their messaging and, you know, client hosting, all of that, and really started to get a gauge. I came from a background of radio broadcasting, and once I lost that fire, I decided to come to Reno. Been here for the last couple and a half years, and, you know, kind of started to go to the soccer direction. I really like the soccer event experience, the atmosphere, everything that is about soccer. I really found that I enjoyed. And when Andy moved on to another opportunity back in December, really made it known that, you know, wanted to be considered.
And you're not just bringing some front office experience to this job, but you also were a soccer player. You were on both men's and women's coaching staffs in college. So how does kind of seeing both sides of the soccer world just help you appreciate and understand where players and coaches might be coming from?
Yeah, obviously as a player, right, it's just coaching, right? And obviously got to those that rank in terms of coaching at the Division III level. But, you know, when I was able to play, went through quite a few injuries in my life, but some torn ACLs. I, you know, had a blast. You know, the team unity and atmosphere. And, you know, you're playing for, like this club is, they're playing for a community. We're playing for our college. So really had that same passion behind it as I think that the guys here with 1868 FC do. And then on the coaching side, it's the flip kind of, the script flips a little bit in terms of working with players and dealing with those player injuries and shifting, you know, the starting 11 and, you know, making some hard decisions day to day of what guys are going to be in that starting 11, who's going to be on in the 18 active roster for a game, and then, you know, who's not and who needs to kind of improve. So it was cool on both sides. Luckily, I was never left out of the 18 back in college, so didn't have to go through that, but fun on both ends for sure.
And then you have a fair amount of experience with the players and coaches already on the staff for the 1868 FC. So how immensely does that help you kind of transition into the general manager role?
Sure. Have definitely worked with Ian here and there. To be honest, we do have two separate buildings. I really was more focused on the business side, so didn't have the type of relationship that I'm going to have with him now. But we lean on Ian and the relationship with the San Jose Earthquakes, our affiliate. And, you know, he's the type of guy who wants to attack. I was always that type of player in college. I wanted to go, even if I couldn't go very fast sometimes. you know, so I think just style-wise, you know, and mindset-wise, I really appreciate what Ian brings to the table. And obviously, he's had a ton of success in the first 2 years, and the team's off to their best start in franchise history through the first six so far this season.
Talking with new 1868 general manager Doug Raftery, and GMs can take different approaches to how they handle teams, how they handle the press. But when you are making this transition to the general manager role, what is it more of one-on-one with coaches? Is it kind of talking to individual groups, or is it more just kind of one genuine conversation with the coaches and the players? How is that transition process kind of start?
In terms of the outside community or internally?
Internally.
I'd say, you know, certainly coaching staff first.
Yeah.
That's really where it all starts. You have to have that relationship and build that trust, not only with Ian, but Casey Tate, Chris Melnab, who are our two assistants. We have a strength and conditioning guy. You know, we've got a trainer. So certainly part of the GM role is to build that relationship, and then that goes down to the players. But also on the business side, right, one of my main focuses is certainly building and growing this club in terms of fan support. So we need the players and the coaching staff to really be bought into what we do outside of what they do on the field, right? Out in the community, going to parades, going to festivals, just being an ambassador for what Reno 1868 is. And I still think we're learning that identity a little bit.
And like you mentioned, team's off to a great start, only lost one game in the first month and a half of the season, which is extremely impressive. So what has kind of been the big difference that you've seen that's helped this team kind of evade that slow start that they've had in prior years?
Well, we've got a lot of returners, so that definitely helps bringing a guy like Brian Brown back who can he's got a knack for the back of the net. He's got five goals already in the six matches. You know, Alinda Mifeka, you know, leading the midfield. We had a great signing from, you know, Las Vegas with Raul Mendiola, who has really bolstered the midfield. Brent Richards in the back. We got Zach Carroll in the back. I mean, these guys who just have a lot of minutes, even if it's not with the current setup, you know, even last year, if we signed new guys like a Mendiola, they've got that style that Ian really appreciates, and they kind of slid right in, where I think Ian was really learning his own style right through his first couple years as well. So, but player familiarity definitely has something to do with it, I think.
And then you mentioned it as well, this team, you're taking over for a team that has a lot of experience and a lot of success in that short amount of time. So as a new GM, what's kind of that goal or that building block that you're looking to achieve this year to kind of help build on that success?
Well, the goal was always to get better, right?
Yeah.
Year after year. So that's probably as much of a, you know, not a golden answer of what you're looking for. But right, last year we progressed and won that first playoff game on the road.
Yeah.
After in 2017 we had that home playoff match and weren't able to secure the W. But we went to Salt Lake last year, got that win, and then unfortunately fell in Orange County, you know, in the conference semifinals. But you know, this year, how do we get to the conference finals? And then how do we do more after that? So Ian would say that same exact thing, and that's basically my message.
Well, Doug, thank you very much for coming in and talking to me, man. We really appreciate it and can't wait to see what happens with the team.
Thanks.
Big thank you there, Doug Raftery, for coming in and talking to me. That was on Monday. He was a very busy man. That was the day he got introduced. But very happy he was able to come by, find some time to talk to us. And good luck to him on his general manager adventure. And, of course, get out there and continue to support the 1868 and the Aces. When we come back, we'll have the newest Reno team, the Reno Express. We'll interview with some of the players and the head coach, as well as the GM, Anthony Bartley. And our bud Ian from Prop Swap will be on the show as well. That's coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Big, very excited, very, very excited to have had the opportunity earlier this week to sit down with the head coach and general manager, Anthony Bartley of the Reno Express, as well as players TJ Oates, Savon Marniz, and DeAndre Botten. And here is how this conversation started. Started off by asking them about their travel between Washington road games.
We traveled back. We came back from some games.
In between games? What's that? I mean, I know this is the first season, so you're all kind of getting used to the schedule and the travel. So what was that experience like playing your first couple road games?
It was an experience. You know, having to go out there twice like that, deal with that hostile environment, you know, it's a lot for our team to have to test ourselves, you know, see who we really are. But, you know, it was a nice little trip, you know, thinking about, reflecting over a lot of things we can go forward with, and looking forward to getting out there this week, so.
And, Savon, I want to ask you a question. I know you guys are all adjusting now from – because most of you, you know, you play on outdoor fields, outdoor football a lot, now coming indoor. Is it a big adjustment for your game style, or is it kind of just the same thing, just indoors? How's that adjustment been to indoor football?
Yeah, coming into it, I didn't think it was going to be much of a change, but it really is, you know, with the field being smaller, with the different motions that can be used in the way that they play. Your whole style of play has to be a lot faster and has to be a lot more direct. If you're not as precise with your routes or with your throws, it kind of throws off everything in the game. You're too late all the time, so I had to really catch up to speed there.
What about you, TJ? Is it been an adjustment for going in outdoor to indoor, and how's that been for you?
This is my third year of indoor football. You know, being one of the veterans on the team, it's been interesting to watch as we try to grow and learn and build that chemistry and timing as a team. But it's something that I've seen before, and I'm used to, and I'm excited for our offense to get out there and show what we've been working on. And I feel like we're starting to really click, and we're excited to get out there again.
And you guys had your first game was here at home. What was that like, taking the field in front of the home crowd for the first time? I heard it was a great crowd there for the home opener. What was that feeling like?
It was a really good experience. The fans were terrific. It was good to see the community out there, and we were able to put on a good show for them offensively and defensively. Although our record doesn't show it right now, I think that we have the best team in the league, and it's just a matter of getting everything going in the right direction. And we're excited to get out there again and hopefully see even more fans out there.
And as you guys get ready, you play the Skyhawks for the third straight time now coming here into Reno. When you see a team three times in a row, kind of what's the key to having that approach that allows you to still do play your game but make those adjustments to combat that team?
Right. And, you know, it comes down almost to like the law of averages. So as we watch the two games and balance the types of defenses or offenses that they're bringing to us, we want to average those together and kind of find what we did well and also find where our problems were and really work on those things and make sure that we're executing on those parts that we dropped the ball on in previous games. And it gives us a good understanding of who they are. We know exactly who they are. We know what they're going to bring to the table. I feel that we haven't brought our full game to the table yet, which is a good thing. So when they come here, they're not going to see exactly the same thing that they saw from us the first two times, but we know pretty much we're going to see the same thing from them.
And a lot of local talent. In fact, Coach, I have a question for you. Putting this team together, there's a fair amount of local talent, not just here in Reno, but you know, Nevada and California as well. Was that an emphasis when putting this team together to try to get local talent, or did it just kind of fall together that way?
Well, ideally, that was the primary focus, bring in more local talent, because the city of Reno does have a lot of talent here, you know, and it would do the city a disservice if I focused on like what a lot of other teams do, is bring in a lot of outside talent. You know, it takes away from that personal ownership of the program. So yeah, primary focus, local talent, let these guys play professional football in front of their hometown.
And your head coach and GM, which is cool to be both of those positions, how do you kind of find the balance between those two roles?
It's tough. It really is. Like I said, as I wear multiple hats many a times, I'm something that I'm used to doing. But like I said, you just kind of go through that mindset, you know, on the field, your coach, off the field, your GM.
And is it tough to, because as a coach, you want to build relationships and develop these players and be there for them. But as GM, you might also have to make some difficult decisions. So how do you kind of connect with these players and then also keep it as professional as possible?
Well, the whole idea of it is we're building a platform for these young men, you know, guys who may have the potential to move to the next level, or some, this may be the highest level that they get to, as I explained to them in the very beginning. But the whole idea is we're trying to get to that level of professionalism, no matter how you look at it. So when we're talking with the players, you know, we really try to keep everything, you know, respectful as far as, you know, conversation. We try to keep everything respectful as our method of play, both home and away.
And then you guys, as I mentioned, you have a home game coming up this Saturday against the Skyhawks. You're also doing a celebration of youth that night. So what can fans kind of expect from that experience?
Well, that night is really geared to our nonprofit partners. We want to bring more awareness to what they do within the community itself. And believe me when I tell you, there are a lot of people who do not know about these organizations or what they do. So my thing is, you know, try to get the community involved, you know, get to meet some wonderful people who take time out of their lives to, you know, help provide and give, you know, to the less fortunate or just give that mentorship to the youth. So that's our primary focus.
And that's a great goal as well to have, especially when you can partner with the Aces in the 1868, which I know you've said is a big goal of yours to bring kind of that whole sports community together here in Reno, which looks like it can be a great opportunity for you guys.
Yes, and I've talked with the Aces in recent months, and I'll be looking at reaching out to them again, especially since their season is underway now. Now I feel like we can do some more things together as a sports entertainment family.
And one more question here for the players. I'll go kind of one by one. But the Alliance of American Football kind of announced its suspension lately. But for you guys kind of being in this league that's getting going, how do you kind of see the idea of a quote-unquote developmental league? Do you think that could work? And as a player, how would you kind of approach that idea of a developmental league? Savion, we'll start with you.
I thought it was a great deal to have, and it is something that the NFL is going to be in need of. Especially with, you know, the turnover of players and how many are going in and out. It was a great thing, and it's something that even players like us would look forward to, is that a kind of opportunity. And they're not the only league that does that. And, you know, if you look at the CFL, they actually do have a developmental program all through Europe. They feed off of all the teams in Germany, Serbia, and all of those other European teams. So it isn't something new, and it isn't something that's going to, you know, be gone right away. I'm sure there's going to be another opportunity for that to pop up, and I'm in support of it. I think it'd be a great deal.
Dre?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was a great platform, something that they were trying to do. That was great. A few of my old teammates actually played in that league. So, I mean, looking at that league, when playing this league I was in, that was something I was aspiring to go do. Now that that's not, it's gone, it's not here anymore. I mean, I'm pretty sure there'll be another league to come out, something to supplement that group of talent. I think, though, just, you know, starting out with a lot of leagues like that, just from the top to the bottom, it has to be, you know, everyone has to be on the same page. There's been a lot of things that, you know, can't go unsaid or unheard. I think those a lot of times that keep a lot of leagues from prospering in the right direction. But, you know, it's overall, I think, like, you know, people who are trying to do those kind of things are just great, you know, for the game of football. And hopefully, you know, pretty soon here, there's some other kind of thing that you know fills that void that we need. So
TJ?
Yeah, I think that like these guys have said, the league was a great opportunity for people. I think any opportunity for people to continue to play football is a great thing. I think there's a lot of talent out there that doesn't necessarily get seen right away out of college. You know, maybe they didn't have the best pro day or, you know, anything like that. You just never know. You know, examples like Kurt Warner, you know, coming up from the Arena Football League and things like that, and then he goes on to win a Super Bowl. So, you know, there's great talent in all types of leagues, and that's what we're just trying to do here is build a platform for other football players who come behind us, as well as for ourselves. We just want to play football at a high level. So that's what we're trying to do. And I think that the league was a great idea, and I'm sure as these guys have said too, there's going to be more leagues that come around. And it's not something that's going to go away. There's a lot of talent, a lot of focus on football in this nation right now, from, you know, from the high school level all the way into the college level. There's a lot of players, and there's not a lot of spots in the NFL, but, you know, there's guys out here that are willing to work hard and look for an opportunity. So I think that the league was a great idea, and look forward to some more developmental leagues.
Well, I got to tell you, it's great to have football back here in Reno. It's always fun to have that sport, especially when it's local and there's a lot of local talent on there. So I appreciate you guys coming in. We can't wait for the next home game coming up this Saturday, and can't wait to see what happens.
All righty, thank you.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to all those guys for coming in. They do have their next home game tomorrow against that same Washington team. So get on down there, support them, see what they can do, and should be a lot of fun. Great to have football back. And, of course, like we do every Friday, I got to sit down earlier today on the phone with our buddy Ian Epstein from Prop Swap down in Vegas. Had a nice conversation with him about all the craziness involving the Masters and the playoffs, and here's how that conversation sounded. Joining me on the phone, Ian Epstein from Prop Swap. And Ian, I have to imagine now that the Masters is in the books, There had to have been a lot of activity around Tiger Woods on Sunday. What was that like?
Yeah, Tiger Woods is great for golf. Everyone, you know, tunes into their TV screens when he's on, and no different with Prop Swap. We saw tons of activity on Sunday during the Masters, and obviously Masters is popular already, but Tiger Woods just kicks it up to another notch.
What was a Tiger ticket that stood out to you? Was there any kind of crazy bet that you saw around Tiger?
Yeah, I mean we saw a guy he bet $100 at 10-1 on Tiger, and then he sold that ticket on Sunday for $350. So the seller was able to profit $250, and then the buyer was able to turn his $350 investment into $1,100. So both people made money there. That's kind of the beauty of Prop Swap. Even if you sell a ticket that ends up winning, you're still making money, right? I don't really feel bad for people who, if you're making money, that's the name of the game. So we saw a lot of activity there. We saw some activity with Francisco Molinari. A guy sold a Francisco Molinari ticket at -188 odds right when he was like on the 10th hole on Sunday. So this was right before he kind of took a collapse. And again, that's another beauty of Prop Swap is that during the round, you're able to capitalize on some of these investments. So for example, the guy who sold the Molinari ticket, he originally bet $6. Okay. He bet $6 at 50-1. And then he sold that ticket for $200 during the round. And so, and then that was right before Molinari put the ball in the water on the 12th hole. So he really capitalized on that ticket.
And then a young player that kind of made a run at the group of leaders on Sunday was Patrick Cantlay. Did you see any kind of tickets around him on that second half of the day on Sunday?
Yeah. So once Molinari put his ball in the water on 12, that really opened up the entire tournament. So that put Cantlay in the mix. We saw some tickets sell on him. We saw tickets sell him at 19-1 odds on Sunday. We saw Xander Schauffele in the mix, and then of course Tony Finau was also in the mix. We sold some tickets on him. We sold a ticket on Tony Finau prior to Sunday's round. Some guy bet $50 at 65-1 odds, and he sold that ticket for $400. And I was talking to someone about this sale, and the guy said, "Oh, that was such a dumb sale." And he's saying that because this person I'm talking to was holding a Tony Finau ticket. He was like, because the thing could win over $3,000. And this guy's like, "Oh, that's such a dumb sale. Why would someone sell their ticket for $400 when they could win $3,000?" And because Finau was in the final group at this point. And I said, "Well, actually, this seller, he's got two identical tickets. So he's got two $50 tickets. And so he sold one for $400. So now he's made a profit of $300 to cover he's covered both of his investments plus a $300 profit, and he still has a second ticket that could win $3,000 if he wins.
Wow, there is craziness happen all over the place during the Masters. That's why it's one of the best golf tournaments on the calendar. And now that that's in the books, let's look at towards the Stanley Cup playoffs, because there's been some hectic stuff happening around that as well, with Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh both getting swept out of the first round. What was the kind of activity you saw around those two teams over the weekend?
Yeah, shocking that Tampa Bay Lightning went from a +175 favorite to win the Stanley Cup to out in less than a week. That type of fall from greatness is just unheard of. I mean, Tampa Bay had one of the best regular seasons ever, not just this year. And so, people think about Prop Swap, and typically they think, oh, it's a place where you can sell the future to make a profit, right? You bet a little to win a lot, and then you can sell that on Prop Swap and make a profit. But that's not the case. Prop Swap is also a place where you can sell tickets for a loss. It's a way to get out of a bad investment. And so we had a customer who is in New Jersey. He bet once the Lightning were down 1-0 against the Blue Jackets, he bet $23,000 on the Tampa Bay Lightning to win the series, to win $10,000. And after they lost game two, he brought that ticket to us. He listed it for sale, and we actually got him a bid as high as $14,000 for that ticket. And so, yes, he would have lost, what was that? He would have lost $9,000 on the ticket. But guess what? Losing $9,000 is better than losing $23,000. But he rejected that bid of $14,000. So he rejects $14,000 going into game three. They lose game three, and then he has it up for sale for $5,500. Someone bid $5,000 on the ticket, and he rejected that bid. And then, of course, Tampa Bay goes out. So it was kind of a lesson to say, like, look, if you think the ticket's a loser, right, if you've written it off and you have lost all confidence in it, don't haggle over the price, right? I mean, if you can get 90% of your asking price, then you should take that. If you think it's a loser, then just get out while you still can and take something, because something is better than nothing.
That's true, especially when you're dealing with that much money. And then the NBA playoffs also underway. They're at a little bit of a slower pace, only about two or three games into each series. But what's kind of been the activity you've seen, especially around Denver, who's trailing now to San Antonio in that series, and some of those Eastern Conference series? What's been the ticket activity around that?
Yeah, so the Milwaukee Bucks, as I think I've mentioned on here before, that's the team I kind of have my eye on in terms of if they could make some noise, because they were 100-1 before the season, and they're looking fantastic. One interesting ticket we saw, you mentioned the Spurs. That might be like the one and only first-round upset. A guy bet $100 at 250-1 odds on the Spurs to win the championship a couple months ago, and he sold that ticket on PropSwap for $450. So seller turns 100 into 450, and the buyer spends 450 to possibly win $25,000 if the Spurs make the championship. So those are odds of 55-1. Now, again, the buyer in this case, the Spurs don't need to win the whole thing for this to make money. It just needs to improve. So if the buyer gets in right now, and then let's say the Spurs make the Western Conference Finals, he'll be able to sell this thing for a huge profit regardless. So that was one interesting sale we saw.
And then a lot of activity going on this weekend with hockey and basketball. So if you had to make a suggestion to the people listening about what you've seen so far on PropSwap, to what would they look for coming up this weekend?
Yeah, go download the PropSwap app, available for iPhone and for Android, or check out the website, PropSwap.com. We've got tons of tickets for sale, ranging in prices. You know, you don't have to be a big spender to get involved in PropSwap. We have lots of guys listing small parlays. Just right now, I mean, we got a guy who's listing a bunch of NBA to win the series parlays, starting at $30. So go check it out and get involved in some tickets and have some fun.
Well, Ian, we really appreciate your time, man. Like always, it's great to know what's happening down in Vegas and in that wild world of sports betting. So we appreciate your time and can't wait to hear from you next week.
Thanks, Spencer. Talk soon.
Always insane to hear the amount of money that gets passed around or
betted. Makes me feel really poor.
Yeah, it does. It makes me feel like I got work to do in my life still. A lot of work, and that scares me.
The worst part is whenever I try to take these bets that all these props swappers or anyone's trying to go, I'll go and be like, all right, you know what? I'm going to put $50 down on this one, and then it won't win. And I just spent $50 on something that they guaranteed would win, and I'm just like, I should have just paid you whatever amount of money it is to get you to guarantee that and then get that money back.
There you go, man. It's a wild world of sports betting out there. And what's even more wild is we got something for the people. Sean, what is it?
We have a pair of tickets to see Skid Row with Great White at the Harrah's Reno Outdoor Plaza on June 30th. Plus, a lunch for two from Porta Subs.
Yummy, yummy. Good time and good food. That goes to caller number 9 right now at 775-333-0945. Basketball and hockey playoffs after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Oh, what a time it is to be a hockey and basketball fan, because what a first round that's been going on. I couldn't believe that of the two teams to get swept out of the first round, it would be Sid the Kid and the Pittsburgh Penguins, and then the best team in the National Hockey League this year, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Both gone. Those have been the only two eliminations so far in the playoffs.
Well, there goes my bracket.
Yeah. I mean, Tampa Bay, I'm pretty sure, was at the top of at least like 80% of the brackets that were filled out. I mean, no one could have seen a team that had either lost in regulation or lost in overtime in just 20 games this year get swept by a team that clinched their playoff spot with just a couple days left of the season. It is incredible. Meanwhile, Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders sweep Sid the Kid and the Penguins straight out of the playoffs. So you know that while the defending champion Capitals have their hands full with the Carolina Hurricanes, who have now tied that series 2-2 after a 5-0 win at home in Game 3, and I believe it was, I think it was 2-1, a 2-1 game last night with Washington to take Game 4 and tie that series up 2-2. I feel like Barry Trotz and John Tortorella, who is the coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, if you don't know, are in the car right now, together, windows down, smoke pouring out the back, middle fingers up to society, saying, we'll see y'all in round two. Because if, again, anybody out there who said they saw Columbus in any way, shape, or form making it past Tampa Bay in the first round, and then said they had the Islanders sweeping the Penguins, are lying to you.
Straight lying.
They're lying to your face if they say they saw that coming in the first round of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, I definitely didn't.
Oh,
even the
no.
I talked about hockey for a whole 10 days on when I was gone.
You were surrounded by Canadians.
Yeah, and they're all like, oh, yeah, yeah, don't even worry about the Islanders. Oh, yeah, yeah, don't even worry about that. The Lightning's going to win the whole thing. I'm like, that's what I thought. Now we're sitting here. I'm going to go call him after and be like, you were wrong. I listened to you and you were wrong. It's like this prop betting sweat all over again.
I love how whenever we want like gratification or something or like assurance on a hockey matter, we look to Canadians.
It's great. And now I have Canadians on like speed dial. So I'm
look
just
that.
Like, you know, it's not my family
there
I'm calling.
Go.
They're all basketball fans. My Canadian family's all basketball fans. They don't know anything about hockey. But these guys, I'm going to be like, you were wrong.
Yeah. They were, man. I think pretty much everyone was wrong. The fact that Columbus, and what's crazy about Tampa Bay falling apart to me too, is, I mean, take your hat off to the way Columbus played, but Tampa Bay really had a horrifying collapse in these four games. Really, the best they played, period, was the first period of Game 1, where they had a 3-0 lead over Columbus. From the second period of Game 1 on, it was all Blue Jackets. And not just outplaying Tampa Bay either. Tampa Bay shot themselves in the foot several times. I think the biggest bullet to the foot was Nikita Kucherov's suspension in Game 2, which then didn't allow him to come back in Game 3. And Tampa Bay looked lost. They just looked lost. Because they were down 2-0, which I think really caught them off guard, especially blowing that Game 1 win, which looked like a surefire thing after 20 minutes. So I think mentally, they were just unstable. They were kind of like, okay, how do we bounce back from this? How do we get back on track? And you lose one of your best scorers on the team in Nikita Kucherov, and it was almost like putting a blindfold on them when they went out in Game 3.
Maybe they should have gone and watched like Mighty Ducks some more inspiration when people get moved out of the way, you know.
But it literally looked like someone put, you know, they just shoved the blind mice out there on the ice to play hockey because they were like, yeah, they were using their hockey sticks as the you know, walking sticks.
Oh, is this
to
the
fight.
Salt shaker?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was unbelievable to watch that game and watch this team collapse in that span. But it happened. That's one of the greatest things about sports is you just never know. And no one could have. I mean, I don't even think people in Columbus truly thought going into that series that they were going to be able to beat Tampa Bay, let alone sweep them.
What's the highest scoring hockey game you've seen? Because this is 7-3 in the last game. I don't think I've ever seen a game above 7.
I went to a Sharks-Sabres game. Oh, man, that was a while ago. That was back when I think I was still in junior high. And the final score, I believe, ended up being 10-4. I think Buffalo won that game. But I think that 7-3 is a little misleading because Columbus, I think, had two or three empty net goals in the last couple minutes. But regardless, the fact that Tampa Bay had to go empty net in that fourth game
says
just
a lot.
Says, yeah, it says everything about the struggles of that team right now and what they went through. And they put something out on social media as well. I don't have it directly in front of me. It was something along the lines of, we feel your pain. There's nothing right now that says that can say we're sorry enough. And, you know, thank you for your support and all that. It literally was like someone died in the Tampa Bay family. Like, it literally felt like the Lightning fans were witnessing a funeral. It was crazy how just kind of dead the whole talk and everything went when Tampa Bay went to Columbus. It was no longer, wow, look at this team and what they're doing. It was, what's happened to the Tampa Bay Lightning and what's going to happen? And what's going to happen is they're going to sit on the couch and watch the rest of the playoffs.
I wouldn't even watch it. I'd just sit there and just, you know, be like, if I was one of the, like, the scorers on that team, I'd be like, all right, well, back to the basics, guys. I'm going to go out to Alaska for the next couple months or wherever and just play hockey, hockey, hockey. Because, I mean, when you're in that mindset, when you get blown out and you're the top seed in the tournament, blown out in all four games, you didn't even look like a team the last three games. The fourth game, I honestly thought I was looking at, like, ants on the screen for a little bit. I was like, is that white noise going on down there? But it is, it's crazy. And that's, like you said, that's the glorified point of sports. We get to enjoy all these wacky incomes, even if our brackets are basically done for in the first, you know, first games. But yeah, I mean, I had the Lightning winning. So I'm just sitting here like, there's no point. I'm going to still watch, but I'm just like, I don't even know what's going to happen now.
Yeah. And, everything in the West still to play for. The only game happening in the Western Conference today is Colorado and Calgary. Colorado with a 3-1 series lead could knock out the Flames, which would see the top seed in the Western Conference not make it out of the first round, which would just add to the craziness. And it should be a lot of fun. So tune into all that because you can't beat hockey playoffs. When we come back from the break, there was an historic comeback on Sunday at the Masters. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. A historic event took place this past Sunday as Tiger Woods, for the first time in his career, came back from trailing after 54 holes to win a major. He was trailing by 2 strokes going into the final round on Sunday before bringing home his 5th Masters championship and his, I believe, his 15th overall major win, which now brings him within 3 major wins of the great Jack Nicklaus. Excuse me. Goodness.
You got this.
There was a tickle in my throat. I don't know where it came from. but it was a great show. It was a great effort from Tiger. It was great to see the Augusta crowds again cheering. And I mean, when you see those Masters tournaments on, or any major tournament on TV, the crowds that form around these holes are ridiculous, especially when they get on the green. And it's just a barrier of people around this putting surface. And it was crazy just to see the following that he had. But it was kind of cool for me because it tapped into some nostalgia. Because when Tiger was really going through his big streak in the late 90s, early 2000s, when he was getting a bulk of his major wins, I was in elementary school. I don't really remember. Like, the last major I really remember Tiger winning before this was the last one he had won, which is the 2008 U.S. Open, which is the great story where he went up against Rocco Mediot. And if you don't know, a little thing about Tiger Woods is every final round that he is in it, where he has a chance of winning, he typically wears a red shirt and black pants, like he did this past Sunday at the Masters. So at that U.S. Open, they go into a playoff. I'm sure some of you out there listening remember this. And Rocco Mediot, who was going up against him, also in that playoff. Those are the two guys left. Rocco came dressed like Tiger Woods. He had the red shirt on, the black pants. He put a black vest over it. But that was kind of his mental battle with Tiger. And that was the last major that I remember Tiger winning, and that – honestly, it kind of felt like Tiger. And then, of course, everything that happened, his downfall on Thanksgiving that year, then coming back through injuries. But it was cool just to kind of see what it was like during my childhood. It was cool to see what those crowds looked like when Tiger was on the green. It was cool to see them react to Tiger. And again, I heard some conversation about this, you know, how can people root for him after what he's done, what he did to his wife and all that. And I get that. I get that if you can't get over it. I totally understand it. No way does this make up for it either. But I don't think anyone should be held accountable for feeling bad rooting for Tiger this weekend when you just appreciate the game of golf and how tough it is to put 4 rounds together like that. And a guy that's gone through not what he did personally with his family and all that, but just the injuries, constant injuries throughout his comeback, just to see him get back there, put 4 rounds together, and really operate in a game of golf, in a tournament of golf like that, was cool. And again, it doesn't fix anything, but I just think it was okay to get lost in that excitement for this one weekend. And it was okay to be happy that Tiger was able to come back and get this. Maybe this is his last major win. And I think if it is, very, very cool that he got to do it in comeback fashion. And, you know, what to expect now? Can he win more majors? Can he possibly get any closer to Jack Nicklaus? I think that's the big question. If he can play like he played at the Masters, there's a very good chance that he might be able to. But only time will tell. But that's the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. I appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed it. Get out there. It should be a relatively nice weekend. It could be a little stormy, but, you know, get out there, enjoy the nicer weather.
I don't know if it's supposed to be stormy. Is it supposed to be stormy?
I thought I heard something about thunderstorms.
Who knows?
Maybe on Saturday. But either way, enjoy the time out there. Have fun. Support local teams. And just enjoy the weekend. Peace.